got to work, so it's good.
Good afternoon. We'll open the Senate Revenue Committee. Welcome our new members, Senator Nelson. If you'd like to make any sort of statement or...
we have a lot of time, though. A couple months to...
Yeah, got a lot. And Senator Metzger, welcome to our committee. We are going to start with House Bill 2372, and then we'll move to Senator Morris's package. We'll do SJR 18 first, which is a gut and stuff, and then House Bill 2168, which we're awaiting amendments on. The A3 members that we have is removes the original contents of the bill, and as per the request of the chair of the House Revenue Committee, he ask that we just do a stop and not a gut and stop on that one, so we're waiting for those amendments and should get them in the next 10 minutes. Open a work session on House Bill 2372. Elizabeth?
Chairman Deckard and committee members, for the record, I'm Elizabeth Martin Mahar with Legislative Revenue Office. So with House Bill 2372, you have a dash A3 amendment. And what this is doing is it just extends the sunset date on the property tax exemption for environmentally sensitive logging equipment from July 1st, 2008 to July 1st, 2012. So basically, the Ayn Gross bill eliminated the sunset entirely. This is just bringing the sunset back, extending the deadline from 2008 to 2012. This has a revenue impact out in the future, beginning in tax year 08-09, of roughly $2.7 million a year or $5.4 million a biennium.
Thank you. And if we could have Mr. Geisinger and Hasina, I hate to break up your conversation there, but if Hasina and Gil, if you'd like to come up. Originally, we all disagreed on this bill, but I think we found maybe consensus.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Jim Geisinger. I represent the Associated Oregon Loggers. We're a trade group that represents over 1,000 small contract logging companies in the state of Oregon. We originally advanced this bill in 1999, the original bill, to grant the same kind of property tax relief to modern logging equipment that the agricultural industry has enjoyed since 1973. The similarities between the two industries are quite stark. Our equipment sits idle many months of the year, just like farming equipment does. Modern logging equipment is extremely expensive, $1 million plus to get a side going in today's environment. We have made the investment in this modern equipment as we made a transition from logging old-growth timber primarily on federal lands, which isn't selling any timber these days, to where we do about 90% of our work on private lands, much of it in second-growth forests. The modern technologically improved equipment that we use today poses a huge financial burden on our industry. Juan Uragwan from Basco Logging in Sutherland, Oregon testified in front of this committee to the fact that his family is still in business in its fifth generation partially because of the property tax exemption that's been in place since 1999. Originally, we wanted to make this exemption permanent. We think the suggestion by the chair to extend the sunset for 4 years is a good idea, and that it will provide even more evidence and data that we can bring back to the legislature at a future date to prove the success of this exemption. And with that, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Senator Metzger.
Thank you. Jim, could you give just a snapshot, since we passed this legislation in 99, of you know, who has utilized this credit and for, you know, what types of primary equipment have been utilized under this bill?
The types of equipment involved is largely ground-based forwarders and processors. This is equipment that can take down a standing tree using automated equipment and load it onto a forwarder and take it off the property and leave a very light touch on the land, primarily for thinning purposes. Also, swing yarders and skyline yarders, which is equipment that can lift the log completely off the ground to fly the logs over sensitive areas and streamside riparian zones and so forth. In order to comply with the more strict requirements that the state has imposed on managing non-federal lands, it's been necessary for our members to upgrade and modernize their equipment, and this tax exemption has contributed tremendously to their ability to do that. In order to keep up with the environmental safeguards and the environmental protection laws that we have currently in place, it's been very incumbent upon our industry to keep that equipment just as modern and up-to-date as possible, and this exemption has allowed that to happen.
Just one follow-up. Then you mentioned the aerial logging. Are the helicopters like Ericsson Skycrane or Columbia, are they eligible, the Vertols and the Boeing Chinooks, under this?
My understanding is that this exemption does not apply to that kind of equipment because the helicopters are not strictly logging equipment. They're used for a variety of other uses. This is more for the traditional mechanized sites that are ground-based and aerial, to the extent that the logs are lifted off the ground by cables.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Other questions?
That is not correct. You do not have to have the permission of that entire side. That's
yeah. We're in the interim. Want that?
Yeah. Just right out.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Gil Riddell, Association of Oregon Counties. We're glad that the amendments retain your tool of accountability, the sunset clause. If this program works the way it is intended to, and you need the 4 additional years to prove it, then we don't have a problem with that.
Ms. Squires.
Good afternoon, members of the committee. For the record, Hasina Squires on behalf of the Special Districts Association of Oregon. We have been consulted with by the Association of Oregon Loggers and do not support eliminating exemptions. Sunsets, but do support this amendment that will only extend it for 4 additional years until 2012.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, actually, one addendum, please, for the benefit of new members in particular. I know you've heard this before. The state sets the policy for what is taxed under the property tax and what is exempt, but local governments pay for it. So that's why Hasina and I are up at the table for this particular bill.
Thank you. Appreciate your time. Appreciate your willingness and cooperation on this measure. We are in work session looking at the A3 amendments.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
A3 amendments to House Bill 2372.
Senator Starr has moved the dash A3 amendments to House Bill 2372. Discussion. Tara, please.
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Senator Starr.
Move House Bill 2372 as amended to the Senate floor with a two-pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved House Bill 2372 as amended to the floor with a two-pass recommendation. Discussion.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ringo.
I was just going to make a comment, but I'm going to vote no on this. I think that when people are asking for a tax break, they have a really high burden of showing why they need it, what policy purpose it advances. And I understand what the proponents have said in this bill, and perhaps there's some merit in it, but I just I don't think that they've made their case that this is an appropriate tax break.
Senator Starr.
I just want to thank the chair for working with interested parties and coming to an agreement, moving the bill, taking the bill to a point we can move it forward to the Senate floor. I just appreciate you working on it.
Thank you. Tara, please call the roll.
Aye.
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 No.
Aye.
Aye.
It's an aye. Motion passes. Senator Starr will carry. Open a. Are you going to start?
Yeah.
Open a work session on SJR 18. Members, you have the amendments before you. Senator Morse, if you want to come up and talk about an initiative that we're somewhat familiar with on this committee. Paul, do you want to introduce the amendments?
Mr. Chair, the SJR 18-4 is the identical to SJR 2 that was approved by the committee back in March. What it does is amends the Oregon Constitution. It modifies the section dealing with a 2% surplus kicker. It directs corporate and non-corporate general fund revenue that exceed 1% of the estimate into a reserve fund. And it goes on and specifies that withdrawals from the fund can be made with a two-thirds vote in both chambers if certain budgetary economic conditions are met. In fact, those conditions are identical to what you have in the Education Stability Fund in the Constitution. The measure, the change in the measure from the SJR 2, which you approved, is it has a May 2004 primary election. I also, on your draft of staff measure summary, left in the bullet points on the issues you discussed when this bill came up previously in its other form.
Thank you. Senator Morse.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Frank Morse, Senator from District 8, Albany, Corvallis. I would like to just very briefly review some additional information that I had asked Legislative Revenue to analyze in response to this question with respect to a stability fund. It's very clear, the polling that we did, which I shared with this committee originally, approximately two-thirds of Oregon's population recognizes that Oregon needs a stability fund, a general fund stability fund. And in fact, the majority of this assembly recognizes that we need a stability fund. The question arises with respect to, should there be caps or should there not be caps on spending? And what I would like to point out to you is a longer horizon look at the spending in Oregon, particularly as it relates to the general fund. We have a structural imbalance in this state in our general fund allocations. We have, during the period of the 90s, we've experienced some rather significant, what I would call signal events in Oregon, Measure 5, the shift to the general fund for K through 12, and those related 47 and 50 initiatives. Measure 11, which incidentally, the K through 12 transferred about almost $3 billion of responsibility to the general fund. Measure 11 transferred approximately $135 to $150 million to the general fund. And we have now the Home Care Commission that's confronting us. Ways and Means is dealing with $25 million. It was not anticipated in anybody's budget that the governor has now suggested that we use to fund the Home Care Commission. Colleagues, that will roll up. Trust me, that will roll up in the out years to probably well in excess of $150 million. These unfunded voter initiatives have transferred to the general fund responsibilities that we cannot support, probably to the tune of about $1.2 billion in today's estimate. And the way that I come at that is if you look at the growth in revenue that supports the general fund since 1989,
it's
you wind up factoring for personal income growth, inflation, and population growth, you wind up with a figure that is far less than, in fact, even the figure that we have to work with, the $10.4 billion in available funds projected today, factored for those increases. So we have a structural imbalance. If we leave this assembly without having addressed the creation of a stability fund, we will have done a major disservice to the state of Oregon. It's essential that we do. I would like to maybe have Legislative Revenue Counsel Paul Warner make some comments with respect to an analysis that I had asked him to make, and that is to look at the general fund starting in 1989 through the end of 2003. And factor that for the growth in personal income, inflation, and population growth, and the unfunded voter initiatives. Because the question that constantly is posed is, how do we rein in the growth in spending in government? It's true. Oregon has had unprecedented growth in spending. But how do we rein that in? Well, what I would suggest to you is that in terms of these unfunded voter initiatives, there's actually been a net decline in available resources for things other than those, the emphasis that's been put on those initiatives. Paul, if I might ask you to make comments with respect to the that column on the lower bottom right-hand side.
Okay, Mr. Chair, Senator Morse is referring to the handout you have. It's in real small print there, LRO 71103, that shows general fund budgets. Senator Morse had asked us to do a simulation looking at general fund only. This doesn't include lottery fund, but it does. It is all general fund expenditures from each of the budgets starting in 89-91, the year prior to the implementation of Measure 5. And then I've got columns on personal income, and this would be statewide total resident personal income in Oregon. The Portland CBI changes the state population, and then we have, since Measure 5 went into place, we have been required to do an estimate on the replacement dollars for Measure 5 and then Measure 50. What that did was calculate the reduction in school property taxes from Measure 5 and then allow a 6% growth in school expenditures. That was outlined, actually still is outlined in the Constitution as part of Measure 5. And so we've continued to grow those even after the measure, after the rate reductions reached their minimum in 95-96. We've estimated some Measure 11 direct costs. And so the last column there is the general fund budget minus those initiatives. And then the next two rows there show the percentage changes for the different categories. And if you look at the general fund expenditures, you can see that general fund spending is growing in the neighborhood of 15-20% each biennium. So significantly above the CPI and even significantly above the combination of the CPI and population growth. One thing I should say, too, is that if you look at the general fund spending versus personal income growth, you can see it's grown faster, and that just shows you, again, the elasticity of the income tax. The income tax is going to grow faster than income in the good times, and then, of course, in 01-03, you see the reverse, where it's declined, whereas personal income has slowed dramatically, but still is actually growing a little bit. When you compare the spending versus CPI and population, you can see that in the last column, you still get pretty significant growth through the decade until 01-03. But the reference Senator Morse has made to the last column of the bottom row there, what that does is take that general fund minus the initiatives and compares that to the CPI and population. And you can see that that's negative for each of the biennium, except for 97-99, where you get 7.2% growth, and 99-01, you get 6.4%. And, of course, that was those gains were eliminated with the 0103 decline of 20% that we've just gone through.
So, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I would ask that you look favorably upon these, number one, the amendment, and then the gotten stuff of SGR 18 to keep these kicker bills in the mix and allow them to come to the floor for a vote. It's clear in our vote count. We had a nice majority in the Senate, and I believe we would have the same in the House as well. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions and certainly appreciate your accommodation to allow these bills and this concept to advance.
Thank you, and thank you for the hard work that you've put in on both the statute and the resolution. Senator Metzger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Morris, again, to echo the Chair's comments, appreciate your diligence and persistence on this measure. I think you've worked very, very hard on it. I do think it makes common sense. And what is interesting, and I'd be interested in your comment on this, as you have talked to other members of the Assembly, there has been a dispute in some quarters about this type of effort associated in addition to a spending cap. And yet, It's very clear to me by this measure, which, as you mentioned, we passed a bipartisan vote out of the Senate, that there is, in fact, an inherent spending cap in this bill because it lowers the threshold for which the state can retain money for additional spending, from 2% to 1%, and requires saving for these expenditures. And I'd be curious for your perspective on how you see this measure as, in fact, not only a responsible savings plan for the needs of the state, but your perspective on this measure as a spending limitation on government as well.
Well, I think you point out, Mr. Chair, and Senator Metzger, I think you point out a very good feature in that there is actually an implied spending cap in this bill, in that, number one, withdrawal of funds requires the conditions precedent in the stability fund. But by lowering that threshold down to 1%, anything over 1% goes into the stability fund, you actually are reining in, at least to that degree, an increase. But, you know, this, colleagues, is what really gives me heartburn. And that is, we're projecting a fund balance, and this is a cash flow balance, at the end of this biennium, based on available data today, and I don't believe that there's manipulation of these numbers, of $1 billion negative cash flow at the end of this biennium. There is a real possibility, and I would say a very good probability, that we will cause the trigger. The trigger mechanism will be in place for the kicker to refund. Let's not dig the hole deeper than it needs to be. We need to end this session with some mechanism, whether it's this concept or whatever. We need to end this assembly with a stability fund. The people, the public, recognize this. With the throes that we've gone through and all the reductions in K-12 and human services and the things that we're imposing in our downsizing, they recognize the need for it. And so I would encourage you to pass this and allow the public to make that decision. This is a referral. This is not a vote of the assembly to enact, but a referral to the voters.
Senator Hannan.
Mr. Chairman, I too want to echo the words of my colleagues in thanking you for your work. But I would be more supportive of this if we were referring a measure to the voters to repeal the kicker. I think we need to be honest with the voters rather than saying, now you see it, now you don't, here it is, there it went. And we're playing a shell game here. And the people are not going to understand it. They don't understand the 2% kicker. They don't understand this. They understand what hits their wallet, but they sure as hell don't understand the shell game that's been perpetrated by the legislature since 1979 when the kicker was created. And the interesting thing is that your statistics here show the greatest amount of spending was during the period of time when the kicker was kicking. So if you think that it builds in a spending cap, it doesn't. It doesn't, because the spending cap was in place during the time that the kicker was kicking. And our growth was continuing to grow. And our demands continued to demand, whether it's Measure 11 or Measure 5 or whatever. So if we're going to have a serious conversation with the electorate, let's tell them the merits and demerits of the kicker and why it needs to be repealed. Let's tell them in truth and honesty in government why it can be used to create and establish a rainy day fund, if that's what you choose to achieve. But let's not use smoking mirrors. We've done that for the last 30 years in this legislative assembly. People didn't believe us then. They're sure as hell not going to believe us now.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hannan, you raise an excellent point, and I can't disagree with it. The one comment that I would make, however, is that this does create a discipline for saving, which a repeal of the kicker would not. So there is some measure of discipline that would be in this referral to the voters.
Mr. Chairman, if I could, I'd play the tape in 1979. That was the same words, the same verbatim words we heard in 1979 when the kicker was created. This will create discipline. This will create discipline in the legislature. And the same words were used then as used now. The only thing that creates discipline is the voters know what the heck their legislator is doing with the money. That's the only thing that creates accountability and discipline, not some phony measure.
Thank you. Senator Farrelly.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, thank you. Not to disagree with my colleagues, but I do.
Wouldn't be the first time, Mr. Chairman.
I do agree with a good senator from Ashland that citizens have difficulty in understanding the kicker and how it works, and I think that's true of legislators as well. It certainly is true of the people that have to forecast the revenue. Because, you know, it's been very difficult to do that. But I think they understood it well enough to vote it into the Constitution. And I know that we've got anecdotal evidence, Mr. Chairman, that the information back from some polls that have been done indicate that this would pass. And I think this is an excellent opportunity for a reality check on the pollsters and whether the questions were pushed or not. Those that do polling will understand that comment. But there is something that my colleagues did with this proposal in the Senate. They passed it. I think it had 20 votes on the Senate floor. And there is an argument that you made, Senator, that I will yield to, and that is that you've asked this group to keep this concept in the mix. And I think at this point we should be as flexible as we possibly can to keep options alive, because we are going to need many more tools, apparently, than we have on the table today in order to come to closure on this legislative session. So even though I voted no in committee on this bill and cheerfully voted no on the floor, I will yield to the wisdom of your comment about keeping it into the mix and support it here today.
Thank you.
We are. Thank you, Senator Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
If you want to stay there, we're going to get to the statutory portion just after this. We are in work session. Further questions or comments? Senator Morris, anyone else in the audience? Looking at the dash four, which would be, and Senator Ringo is not here, Senator Starr, I think this was your original bill as the vehicle, but if this would be a gut and stuff, putting Senator Morrison's original concept into the bill.
Would you entertain a motion?
We are ready to move. The committee is.
I move the dash four amendments to SJR 18.
Senator Starr has moved the dash four amendments to SJR 18. Comments or questions? Tara, please.
Aye.
No.
Aye.
Aye.
Is it aye? Motion carries. Senator Starr.
Move SJR 18 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved SJR 18 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Senator Starr.
I met with Senator Morris, head of this committee, and committed that I would help move this bill to the Senate floor. When the measure was on the Senate floor previously, I voted against the measure, and I will hold the opportunity or the right to do so again on this one, but I appreciate the work the senator has done on this bill and want to make sure it makes it to the Senate floor.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Farrell.
I would echo the comments of my colleague that I don't believe this bill, the referral, will find favor with the voter. And I do, even though I disagree with part of the concept from my good colleague from Ashland, I think it is unreasonable for us to refer referrals that we think will fail, as was done in 38. But I will vote this bill to the floor as a courtesy to the chair. But I reserve the right to vote no on the floor.
Thank you. Senator Metzger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I appreciate the comments by the colleagues on the committee. But I will say that I think that not only is this a good and responsible addressing of state government, you know, we hear often about how government should be run like business. And I don't know any business, even my small little business, that doesn't take excess, you know, income and put it in a reserve fund to make me through those lean months in which the client checks don't come in. It would be totally irresponsible to do that. This does that. And I also disagree with the idea that the public doesn't understand this. And I know, and maybe, you know, Senator Morris, in your days on doorsteps recently as well, how in tune the electorate really is on not only the need for the government to be responsible with its tax dollars, but also to understand, you know, why in the heck, you know, don't we prepare for the unexpected? And I think having a measure like this before the voters, who do understand the kicker provisions of receiving money, if not all the intricacies of that, they certainly also understand that you need to have a reserve fund first. They also understand the need to put some restraint, which is why they put the kicker, I believe, in the Constitution in the first place, because they don't trust those rascals in Salem. And that would be maintained in this provision, and also direct them, because maybe we aren't responsible enough to put money into a savings account, because we would spend it, as Senator Hannon has mentioned, which is why we have the constitutional restriction. But what this does, it meets all those needs, A, of making sure that government doesn't spend beyond its means, B, make sure that we maintain a reserve fund prior to you know, moving into you know, returning of collected monies, and third, making sure that taxpayers do receive those funds when that reserve fund has been achieved. So, again, my compliments, Senator. I do believe the public would look very favorably upon this and look forward for the opportunity to vote on it myself at home. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Metzger. And you are...
Mr. Chairman, I would just like to make one comment. My name has been on the front of this issue, and it's received a fair amount of press in my local district. And I'd have to be candid with you. I've had one negative response to this, and we all receive a lot of correspondence.
Is that your brother, Senator?
Pardon?
Was it your brother?
No. So I just believe that the public is ready for a little more stability than what we've had in funding critical services, and this is a way to help us get there. It's not the answer, but it's a help.
And I think it's important. I think you noted in the first time we heard this that you are prepared to help organize a campaign on behalf of the resolution, or be a part of that.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and in conversations with our governor, he's looking forward to that opportunity to let the voters make this decision and to work in a bipartisan way to get that message out. Mm-hmm. So, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Nelson.
Just to reiterate some of the things that other members of the panel have said, obviously something needs to be done. I don't know if this is the right idea, but I think we need to continue to have a further debate. I would reserve the right to vote no on the floor, but I need to study this a little bit more. I wasn't a part of the first portion of this, but to make sure that it continues to stay alive, I will support it.
Thank you. Kara, please call the roll.
Senator Corcoran?
Aye.
Hannon?
No.
Metzger?
Aye.
Nelson?
Aye.
Metzger?
Aye.
Ariella?
Aye.
Edgar?
It is an aye. Motion carries.
Mr. Chair, I, even though I voted for the motion, I reserve the right to revoke to vote for it on the floor as well.
Thank you, Senator Corcoran.
Senator Morris, would you like to make the same statement I think everyone here so far has.
I would be delighted to carry this back to the floor
Thank
for
you.
A second time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Open a work session on House Bill 2168. This is the statutory portion, and then to Senator Farrelly, statutory portion of that. We have the dash A3s, which are gut and stuff, the dash A4s, which are simply including the low-income housing portion, although we were not able to, and that was the holdup on this bill. Add $2 million this session to the tax credit for low-income housing because we just don't have the resources.
I might just have one small change.
Mr. Warner, just to see if he's so, Mr. Warner.
We have the 2168 A4 amendments, which, as the chair pointed out, is the A3, only it retains the original 2168 language in it. That bill has no revenue impact. The 2168A4 outlines the general operating reserve fund, specifies the conditions under which withdrawals can be made. Again, those conditions are the same as they are in the Education Stability Fund. There is one reference on the last page, on page 9, that needs to be corrected and can be corrected conceptually. And that is, if you look at line 10 on page 9, the section 9 there still refers to the original joint resolution, Senate Joint Resolution 2. So that would have to be changed to Senate Joint Resolution 18, which is the measure you just approved. And the similar change would be on line 15, changing the 2 to 18.
Good catch.
We need a motion to accept.
We would need, motion to successfully amend those two changes.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
I'd move we suspend the rules for the purpose of conceptually amending the dash A4 amendments to House Bill 2168.
Senator Starr has moved that we suspend the rules for the purposes of conceptually amending, what was it, line 11?
Line 10.
Line 10 and line 15 to change SJR 2 to SJR 18. Any objection? In order. Amendment is made.
Then you have to adopt the A4.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
Move the adoption of the dash A4 amendments as conceptually amended.
Senator Starr has moved the adoption of the A4 amendments to House Bill 2168 as conceptually amended. Any discussion? Ms. Lance, please call the roll.
No.
Aye.
Nelson?
Aye.
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 Aye. Is it aye? Motion carries. Senator Morse will carry that bill.
We just
adopted the amendments. Senator Starr.
Move House Bill 2168 as amended to the Senate floor for due process recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved House Bill 2168 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation discussion. Ms. Lance.
Aye.
Hannon?
No.
Lester?
Aye.
Nelson?
Aye.
Tom?
Nelson?
Aye.
Star? Aye.
Do we have an aye?
Aye. Yeah, still there. Nobody has an aye.
Motion carries. Senator Morris will continue to carry that bill. Okay, we need to get Senator Farrelly.
Mr. Chairman,
opportunity to vote on House Bill 2372. Yes, Senator Farrelly.
May I request unanimous consent the rules be suspended to allow me to record a vote on House Bill 2372.
Mayor Fairley, as requested unanimous consent to the rules be suspended so he may be able to vote on House Bill 2372. Any objection?
Mr. Chairman, I would like to be recorded as an aye vote on House Bill 2372.
Let it be recorded that Senator Farioli is an aye vote on House Bill 2372, a bill that he took a great deal of interest in, and I'm glad to see it pass.
Thank you.
So ordered. And members, we will get the amendments to House Bill 2152, which is the product of our bipartisan work group that met the past week. Those should be out in the next hour or so. We're making copies, and so I will have those distributed to your offices, and we do have them. Okay, so members will receive their copies, and we could be up for a hearing as soon as 9 or 10 tomorrow morning for our first hearing on that package. Any changes that you see or questions, please feel free to get to my office either tonight or early tomorrow. We're adjourned.